With rolling blackouts in California and rising energy prices, the Bush administration has seized the opportunity to press for increased domestic oil and gas production. Drilling for oil in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, a Bush administration priority, doesn't appear to have enough votes in Congress to pass. The White House also has set its sights on the Rocky Mountain West. It's challenging roadless protections and monument designations there as barriers to development and energy exploration. NPR's Elizabeth Arnold reports.
Identify, prioritize, and revoke withdrawals. It's a pretty obscure title, and there were certainly no photo ops built around it. But this subsection of a draft report from the President's Energy Task Force is perhaps the most contentious and pivotal piece of the administration's entire policy. What it means is opening up public lands now off limits to drilling. Places like the Missouri River Breaks National Monument, the Sonoran Desert, and the Lewis and Clark National Forest.
The truth is, energy production and environmental protection are not competing priorities.
The president's push for access to public lands is already a reality in parts of the West, particularly along the Rocky Mountain front, from the eastern flanks of Montana's Glacier National Park down through Yellowstone, south into Colorado. The biggest boom is in Wyoming, a leading producer of coal, coal bed methane, and natural gas. As prices hold and technology improves, industry is looking to expand. Bob Eakey is Northern Rockies Regional Director of the Wilderness Society.
Wyoming is in the bullseye right now in terms of energy development. There's a lot of attention going on. There's a lot of support from state government, you know, for drilling. There's going to be a lot of activity. The question is, how much is enough?
Wyoming has always been welcome territory for energy producers who've long had free rein to punch holes into its hillsides and range. Industry is now looking there with White House support for new prospects. Bob Hoagland is the president of the state's Petroleum Association.
I know that in the Bridger-Teton area of Wyoming, we have a reserve in the neighborhood of about 80 trillion cubic feet of gas that's off limits. That's a substantial amount.
But it's also smack dab in the middle of a national forest, bordered by three wilderness areas and two national parks.
Here's Jackson.
Right.
Here's Management Area 43.
Okay. National Forest spokesman Jay Anderson points out four brightly colored management areas on a wall-sized map.
And then the national parks are in close proximity. You've got Grand Teton National Park and Yellowstone National Park. So there's a lot of sensitive lands in the area.
On the map are four nondescript patches of a checkerboard of federal land. But up close, the 370,000 acres that industry has targeted are anything but nondescript. Bridger-Teton National Forest is a mosaic of arid sagebrush desert rolling up into lush aspen groves and snow-covered peaks. Along the forest, dirt roads and trails far from the parade of RVs and campgrounds in the national parks, game is prolific. Antelope, moose, elk, bighorn sheep, and mule deer. Fishermen wade chest-deep in the Hoback, Green, and Grovant rivers that boast cutthroat and rainbow trout. But what may be ideal for the angler and backcountry hiker is by law designated multiple use, subject to leasing requests for oil and gas development. Anderson says increasingly the Forest Service is being pulled in two directions.
We're getting a lot of pressure now, not just from industry to do resource use, but from the general individual user who wants to ride their mountain bike or walk their dog or hike or fish to do resource protection. And as a resource manager, our job is to find that middle ground.
It's a long, laborious task. It began in 1997 when industry first identified the land. Last December, after review, the Forest Service issued a draft environmental impact statement. With several endangered species of fish, the highest air quality in the nation, and a lucrative tourism industry, the Forest Service recommended making the land administratively unavailable. 7 months and 13,000 mostly favorable public comments later, under a new administration, the Forest Service must make a final decision. It would be awkward for the agency to reverse itself, but a White House determined to make more land accessible to industry carries considerable weight as well. Despite concern over the impacts of newly developed coal bed methane production, Hoagland, the president of Wyoming's Petroleum Association, is optimistic.
The technologies that are in place literally keep us from leaving any footprints of the operations to produce that natural gas. And we're not talking about going to the top of mountaintops. We're talking about arid areas that surround that specific area that at this point in time are off limits to us.
What is available to the industry now is 760,000 acres of the forest and vast tracts of BLM land, and it's being developed. To the south is the Jonah gas field, where 493 wells have been permitted. Out of sight from the nearest highway, it's a jigsaw puzzle of drill pads and rigs connected by pipe and washboard dirt roads. 60-foot derricks, trailers, and compressor stations punctuate the otherwise featureless landscape. There's an abundance of natural gas here, and the price is right. Although this windswept place is just a temporary home to a few dozen roughnecks and ranchers, these high desert plains of the upper Green River Basin are also a long-established game migration corridor. And John Catton of the Greater Yellowstone Coalition worries that development like this, further north in the Bridger Teton, would threaten one of the nation's largest intact ecosystems.
There are about 100,000 elk and antelope and deer that move through that area. And so while the upper Green River Basin may not be a household name in America, it means everything to the future of places that everybody does know about and that they want to visit someday and they want to take their kids to, namely Yellowstone and Grand Teton National Parks.
To make their point, environmentalists like to superimpose the massive development that's occurring in eastern Wyoming on Bridger Teton, although in this case, industry is just asking for less than 30 wells. To make its point, industry likes to frame the debate around how well it can disguise development once drilling is ended and wells are capped. But increasingly across the West, as pressure intensifies to use public lands, the question is not about what's on or under the land, or if it can be put back together again, but whether some places should just be off-limits, period. Wyoming senior Republican Senator Craig Thomas, a staunch pro-development conservative, says the answer to that question is yes, and Bridger Teton is a starting point.
We do need to have domestic production. We do need to have multiple use. But after all, 50% of Wyoming is federal land. And some of those lands are different than others. And I think we have to make some choices about what we want in the future in terms of open space, in terms of special places, in terms of wildlife and so on. And so we're not just planning for next month. We're planning for 20 years from now or 50 years from now as well.
Thomas is taking some heat for this position. He's at odds with Wyoming's Republican governor and the administration. But he's come to the conclusion that a line needs to be drawn somewhere. And he's not alone. Just last week, 70 House Republicans ignored appeals from the White House and their own leadership and voted to postpone offshore drilling in the Gulf of Mexico and to prohibit exploration and drilling in national monuments. It was an embarrassing defeat for the president, a show of opposition to an energy policy that's rekindled the debate over preserving versus exploiting public lands. And if the administration keeps pushing, Bridger Teton National Forest could be the next test. Elizabeth Arnold, NPR News, Jackson.